Sitting here trying to watch some of the Republican so-called debate on CNBC, and the only good conclusion I can come to here is that all future debates should be handled by CNBC. Maria Bartiromo and the crew that are questioning these clowns are doing a very good job. They're asking excellent questions, and as these freaks try to weasel out, the questioners have no choice but to allow them to weasel out without appearing to be hostile and aggressive towards these eight clowns. But I'll tell you, Maria Bartiromo and the other three people, I just don't watch CNBC that much, but they're doing a good job with the questions. The answers, of course, are just gibberish, just absolute nonsense. It's just kind of fun to watch up to a point, and then your head starts to explode. You know what I'm saying? There's a website you need to check out. It's unitedwisconsin.com. Unitedwisconsin.com. This is a website that's going to organize and handle the recall of the Stalinist governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker. It's a grassroots coalition of about 200,000 residents of Wisconsin. And organizations who have united to get Scott Walker out of office. It says here, beginning November 15th, we will have 60 days to collect 540,000 plus signatures to recall Scott Walker. Wisconsin has never had a governor recalled, but we cannot sit back and allow any more of Walker's destructive policies threaten our state. We need your help. This is a people-powered movement. Join us. So you can join. You don't have to be, by any stretch of the imagination, you don't have to be a resident of Wisconsin to help. And speaking of Stalinist governors, the governor of Michigan, another right-wing Stalinist, Rick Snyder, has decided to put into play his emergency manager nonsense. So he's decided to take over the city of Flint, Michigan. and the reason is because Rick Snyder's Department of Treasury review team determined that Flint city officials have consistently underestimated the size of ongoing deficits in city funds, and that no realistic plan to eliminate those deficits has been offered, according to reports submitted to the governor. Now, think about that for a second. The people who run the city of Flint have not figured out a way to reduce the budget deficit. Neither has the federal government. Neither has most of the states. This naked, raw grab for power on the part of another. We have three or four governors, Republicans now, who are Stalinists. They're fascists, but they adopt the fascism of Uncle Joseph Stalin. A lot of people say, well, Malloy, he wasn't a fascist, he was a communist. He was not a communist. He was a fascist. I don't care what party banner they operated under. Fascism is fascism is fascism. And that's exactly what Stalin and most of the leaders of the old Soviet Union were involved in. If you want to see communism, and you want to see it in its purest form, look at the original operation of the State of Israel. immediately after it was granted its charter to exist by the United Nations. Go back to the late 40s, early 50s, if you want to see communism. Real kind, which I have, that kind of agrarian reform, communism, communalism, whatever you want to call it, I don't think anybody has any problem with. The Israelis certainly didn't. The Jews that migrated to Israel certainly didn't. But what Stalin did was not communism. It was a form of Russian fascism that was put into control that country, that not the country, but that vast coalition of states that Russians had taken over. So it is not a mistake to call Rick Snyder of Michigan, the governor of Michigan, a Stalinist, at the same time to recognize his fascist tendencies, or a fascist and recognize his Stalinist tendencies. It's all interchangeable. Anyway, if an emergency manager is appointed, Flint would become the largest local government subjected to the powers granted by the legislature, the Republican legislature in Michigan earlier this year. The city has 7 days to appeal this recommendation and an additional 10 days to challenge it in court. Now, what all this means, appointing an emergency manager to take over a city, it's already happened in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Is it Benton Harbor or was the other one across the river? I think it was Benton. Was it Benton Harbor? There are two cities there. Anyway. It's the ability, first and foremost, to terminate union contracts. That's what this is all about. That is one of the primary objectives of Stalinism, is to prohibit the workers to organize. You see how it's not communism? do you understand now? To prohibit the workers from organizing. In other words, to terminate union contracts. It's a power grab that sets up virtual dictatorships and strips power from local elected officials. All election results are canceled. Everything that the people of Flint, Michigan, or what is that? Is it Lenawee County? I'm not sure what county it is, but, forget the county. It's Flint, Michigan. All the elected officials in the city of Michigan would be, if not removed from office, would find that their power to do what they were elected by the people to do has been canceled by the Stalinist governor, Rick Snyder. How about that? Also, an emergency manager who would take over city operations would have the power to raise or extend property taxes, take a host of other actions. A manager could recommend that local governments consolidate and could disincorporate or dissolve a municipal government. Think about this. This is the power that the Stalinist governor of Michigan, Rick Snyder, has accumulated through his manipulation of the Republican legislature in Michigan. It's astonishing. You are witnessing the absolute fascist takeover in little bits and pieces of areas of the United States. And I would hope... I would hope that a resistance would develop in Michigan, certainly the whole state of Michigan, but certainly the city of Flint, to tell these sons of bitches to don't even think about taking over the city. Don't even think about canceling elections. Don't even think about disbanding unions. Don't even think about forcing different municipalities to consolidate. In other words, keep your hands off our city. I would hope. Now, what would you do if you were a resident of Flint, Michigan, and you heard that the governor was about to cancel everything about your city, up to and including your city charter, to dissolve you, to say that you no longer existed as a political entity? What would you do? Would you sit back on your ass and say, oh, okay, all right? Or would you pick that .30-06 off the wall that you go deer hunting with and sit on your front porch and say, bring it on? I mean, what would you do? I don't know what I would do. I would have to give that one a little bit of thought. But at least we see how this is done. Don't forget Hitler, another fascist, was elected, just like Rick Snyder.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I think the I've got to digress here a moment. I think the funniest moment just occurred in the entire Republican clown show. Matter of fact, the entire election cycle, no matter what happened subsequent to what Rick Perry just did at the CNBC debate, he said, when I'm elected president, there are three agencies of government, he meant three cabinet positions, that will be eliminated. He said they are the Department of Commerce, the Department of Education, and then he stopped. And Newt Gingrich said, EPA? The Department of Commerce, Department of Education. And finally, the questioner said, can you think of what the third one is? And Rick Perry says, well, no, I'm sorry. I mean, this is how ridiculous this has become. And the pizza man is standing there rattling off his 999 hog droppings. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And the sad part is, the really sad part is that the two smartest people on that stage are John Huntsman and Newt Gingrich. And Newt Gingrich is so last century. Newt Gingrich ought to just go home, go shopping with Kalista and forget about it. Huntsman would have a chance if anybody knew who he was. But, to listen to, Rick Perry, my God. Well, there are three departments I get rid of. What are they? There's this one, there's that one, and I can't think of the third one. And this guy wants to be president. No, he doesn't. He's like Herman. He's just out there getting paid. That's all. This whole Mr. Bolster book sales or something. Of course, this dumb son of a bitch couldn't write his name, much less a book. I swear. Whew. Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis in the Obama administration had a comment. She said, last night Ohio voters delivered a bona fide victory for public sector workers everywhere. After months of advocacy and organizing, the people of Ohio have defeated a law that would have silenced the middle class and curtailed the collective bargaining rights of thousands of teachers, firefighters, police officers. Ohio has made it clear these dedicated public servants still need a seat at the table to demand fairness, dignity, and respect, especially in tough economic times. Through their unions, Solis went on, they have a voice in their workplace, in their future, most importantly, in our future. She concludes, she said some other things, and she said, concluded by saying, I'm proud to join everyone in Ohio and across the country in celebrating the voice of workers, which can only be guaranteed when they have the right to organize and bargain collectively. Congratulations to all who contributed their time, passion, and dedication to achieve this feat for working families. And what's his name? John Kasich, who is another Of course, Kasich is basically a dumbass. I mean, he's kind of like Herman Cain or Rick Santorum. He really is a stupid man, an ignorant man. Kasich held a press conference shortly after this issue had been decided last night, and he said it was time for him to, quote, take a deep breath and figure out what to do next, end quote. Take a deep breath? John? AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said our message rang loud and clear in Ohio and across the country. Those who spend their time scapegoating workers and pushing a partisan agenda will only strengthen the resolve of working people. He said from the very beginning it's been clear that Governor Kasich and indeed many politicians were pushing an agenda that was about politics, not about solving our nation's problems or creating jobs. Yeah. Well, that's true, and I hope that this little taste of victory, which is probably, and it doesn't matter what the ultimate outcome is, the people spoke in Ohio, and they said, no, goddammit, you're not going to do this. You're not going to do it. Now it's time for the people in Wisconsin to speak, and eventually it'll be time for the people in Michigan to speak, because all these states have fallen under the control of incipient fascists who are using Stalinist techniques to destroy what little tiny bit of democracy still exists in this country. There's not much. And it's scattered around. But there's still a shadow of what the democratic process was supposed to be all about floating around in this country. And these fascists are trying their damnedest to snuff it out. And to use Stalinist tactics so blatantly, it's just, I don't know, it's just, like I said, about a resident of Flint, Michigan. I'd sit on my front porch with that 30-06 and just wait. And the first son of a bitch that came up to tell me that my vote had been canceled, my city had been canceled, my union had been canceled, everything had been canceled. Well, he would be canceled.
Shout the last word, put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ, that's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who wanna be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customer.
Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
This hour is being sponsored by Ed Koper. His message, I can't wait until Jesus comes and picks up his people. They are annoying me. I hear you, Ed. I really do. This Rick Perry thing is just funny. If you go to CNBC, if you have access to CNBC and look at the tweets, Twitter scrolls along the bottom, they are just funny as hell. Rick Perry equals Texas Toast, you know, is one of them. But here's the guy standing up there talking about how he's going to abolish all these government agencies and he can't get past two of them. He doesn't even know what they are. Oh my God. Oh, put a fork in Perry. He's gone. So is Herman. So is Michelle. Rick Santorum never had a chance. Who are we getting down to here? Ron Paul? Forget about Ron Paul. Ron Paul is never going to be anything except maybe a congressman. So you're getting down to Newt Gingrich and John Huntsman. From Prairie 2, the Dow fell almost 400 points today. Oh, the subject line. The pale horse makes money on the way up. And on the way down, you get death. Jesus. Bruce writes, the Dow fell almost 400 points today and the European markets fared worse and bond rates in Italy shot past 7% and into death spiral territory. The high interest rates trigger margin calls among bond traders, forcing sales regardless of the losses. This could also start the derivative avalanche, where somewhere in excess of $250 billion in contracts that were designed as bets on future events start unwinding. Quadrillion. That's 1,000 trillion, isn't it? Whew. All of this didn't happen from chance or nature or even incompetence. It was planned to happen all along. You see, the talking point stressed in the corporate media today is that Italy has been living the good life with much wine and little work. And they tick off all the benefits that Italians enjoy, from maternity leave to health care to early retirement. In Republican terms, that means retiring before you die. How absurd that the peasants should expect the things reserved for the 1%! In reality, Italy is not Greece. Their economy has been healthy, profits up, and the budget has been in surplus for years. They do have a lot of bonds out, but they aren't in debt the way that many countries are that are still considered healthy. Their crime, the Italians, is that the total amount of their bonds being traded is small enough to be captured by Wall Street bond traders. And this is simply as irresistible as death on a pale horse. A big part of this problem is that much of the debt is held in long-term bonds. And while this should be a sign of stability, this does ironically make Italy more vulnerable to capture by the bond traders, who can take advantage of the relatively small number of bonds that need to be reissued. $5 billion to be sold this week and $10 billion next week could end Italian democracy once and for all. Interest rates are climbing fast to levels where it simply becomes impossible to refinance debt. Bonds are sold by auction at a price that reflects the interest rate as if it is paid up front. If the interest rate accrued over a number of years gets high enough, then the sale price of the bond produces too little money to cover the needs of government. In fact, the issuance of bonds simply creates more debt and very little else. In case you haven't guessed, the big U.S. banks are making out like bandits from all of this. Or should I say the bankers are. The banks themselves will ultimately fail or be bailed out from the pockets of the middle class, even if there is no appropriation from Congress. After all, we are talking about the people who create the money and determine its value. And I'm not talking about Congress as called for in the Constitution. As warned against by the founding fathers, the creation of money is firmly in the hands now of bankers and corporations. Today's drop in the stock market caused the average 401k holder a bit over $4,000. Before Reagan, people had pensions for retirement. But people bought into the so-called capitalism of the 401k instead. You put the money in, and Wall Street bleeds it out. It happens every day as the market goes up and the market goes down. And the so-called wisdom reported in the news today was that we can expect to see these wild swings on a daily basis. Every day, thousands drain from your retirement account and from the reserve accounts invested by local governments. You see, the real truth, the one they won't tell you ever on the news, is that when the market goes back up after one of the regular falls, is that you aren't making back any money. The Wall Street banks and hedge funds make money, going up or down. But you have nothing until you sell. And you will always get less than you put in, if you get anything at all. PrayNumeral2.com. And he has something he sent the other night that was so good. I may read it. During the third hour. Prairie 2 back to back is a little difficult to deal with. So we'll have an hour between Prairie 2s. But he sent me one the other night that is. Less on the numbers of what is going on, and more on Prairie 2's own point of view on this, which in a lot of ways, only put entirely differently, reflects a lot of what you've heard me share with you on this program, written by Bob Alexander, or even my own ideas. But I want to share this with you. We'll make it the third hour tonight. Oh, God. From Michael in Roswell, he writes, speaking of the debate, did you catch the moment when Herman Cain said that, quote, for every woman that says I harassed her, there are thousands who say I didn't? Oh, my God. Michael writes, that's some clever math. Looks like his time as a ballistics calculator for the Navy is finally of some use, because that's some prime bombast. Michael and Roswell, I'll have to catch it on the YouTube and on the Daily Show and on this crazed MSNBC program it's on in the morning. Was it Morning Joe? I don't know why I watch it, but I do occasionally. But this again, there are only two people I think that are going to survive this: Huntsman. And Gingrich, and probably Romney. Everybody has already said, all the big bosses in the Republican Party, the big corporatists, the big capitalists have already declared that Romney is the winner. And the only people that can stop that on the Republican side is either Newt Gingrich or John Huntsman. So it doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. Except for the fact that the other five are just so brain dead. I've never seen a collection of morons like these other five, whether it's Rick Santorum or Herman Cain or Michelle Bachmann or Rick Perry. Oh, my God. Where did this guy get the idea that he can govern anything? You know, all this Texas talk is bull hockey. The governor of the state of Texas has as much authority, pretty much, except ceremonial, as I do in the state of Texas. He's nothing. Neither was George Bush. And look what we got. We got 8 years of Dick Cheney. I wonder who would be Rick Perry's Dick Cheney. Satan? Jesus God. But I digress. What else we got here? I'm so sick of talking this political crap. I really am. And the only reason I do is because it is so... I don't know the word I'm looking for. It is so bizarre to watch this stuff from the sidelines, to listen to legitimate, well-thought-out questions put together by this CNBC panel. I mean, these three people, apparently there are three permanent members on this panel tonight, and they keep rotating a fourth position. But if you're not watching this, just for the sake of the questions, you should. I would say that, these questioners from CNBC make the network questioners and Wolf Blitzer and the rest of these people look like a bunch of chumps, like a bunch of halfwits. This group from CNBC is really, really good. Now, I realize that the debate tonight was supposed to be on economic issues. So obviously, these questioners are going to be a lot more astute and knowledgeable than, say, a collection of halfwits from Fox. But, it's worth watching hear the questions. Excuse me. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been brought to you by Ed Cofer, whose message, you can't wait till Jesus comes and picks up his people. They are annoying me. Thanks, Ed. Thanks for the sponsorship. They're annoying me, too. They really, truly are. Switching gears a little bit here. By the way, we're going to take your phone calls probably for the second hour, so get ready to call in if you want. 877-996-2556 is the number. U.S. News and World Report on their web edition has a short piece about Obama faces historic threats. That's according to a former Secret Service agent. It says racism in the nation's white hot political environment that has sparked bitter division in Washington and a political assassination attempt in Arizona have raised concerns about President Obama's safety on the campaign trail, according to a former top U.S. Marshal and retired Secret Service agent. Donald Tucker is his name. He said, quote, "I think there's going to be a violent incident in 2012. I cannot put my finger on when or where. I'm more inclined to worry about the president, but the volatility is there." He went on, "I don't think there is ever enough security when you go from city to city, place to place, shaking hands and kissing babies. Secret Service can only do so much," end quote. Now, this guy, Donald Tucker, spent 25 years in the Secret Service after retiring in 1990. Then President George Herbert Walker Bush named him a U.S. Marshal in Arizona. And last year, he published a biography called Two-Edged Sword about being one of the first black federal agents. His experience with racism during the civil rights movement and his knowledge of political violence, like the Oklahoma City bombing, have him concerned that a wave of anger and frustration with Washington and Obama could result in campaign violence. He says that in 2008, threats against Obama were greater than in any election. Obama became the first candidate ever to have Secret Service protection before winning the nomination. Tucker said, quote, "I'm concerned for the candidates, and I'm concerned for the President of the United States. I think we are in a situation where this president is damned if he does or damned if he doesn't. Whether he's going on vacation or meeting with certain individuals, everything is taken out on him at a level I've never seen," end quote. Secret Service would not comment. Others said that Obama's security is tight and effective and that there are no unusual threats to him. But this 25-year veteran of the Secret Service says, Donald Tucker says, political violence elsewhere is the backdrop to the 2012 election. For example, he cites the assassination attempt on Representative Gabriel Giffords, a recent assault on the president of France, the killing of students in Norway. He says, quote, "I'm looking around at the politics and events that have been in the news media, and I'm very concerned with the division in this country and how the division is being exploited. When you have and have, oh, when you have the have and the have-nots, you push people into a place where they have nowhere to go, and that's when they strike." He added, "Racism is also at play. This country has never witnessed such prejudiced hostility and animosity being generated in the name of political ideology in the last 2 years. Congressmen being spit on. A California Republican politician sending out pictures of the president depicting his mother and father as chimpanzees, holding a baby with the president's face as a baby chimp. This only feeds into the weaknesses of people who will believe anything if it strengthens their hatreds toward a person who is different from them," end quote. Yeah, you don't need to be told this by a 25-year veteran of the Secret Service or a retiring U.S. Marshal. the people out there stoking this violence, this potential violence, and I tend to agree with this the Secret Service agent, the people stoking the violence are all on the right. They start at the top of the dung heap with the pig man, Limbaugh. It includes psychopaths like Beck. It includes kind of namby-pamby pseudo-terrorists like Sean Hannity, who's afraid of his own shadow, and all the way down to real crazy people like Michael Savage, like Bill O'Reilly. I mean, these guys are truly out of control. But when you look at talk radio and you look at what is being put out there on the Christian radio stations, so-called Christian, they're actually demonic, but the so-called Christian programs and the right-wing talk radio, which is about 95% of talk radio across the country. And if you stand back and take a look at it, it's a wonder that violence hasn't occurred to a degree that these right-wing thugs really want to see happen already. And that's what they want. This is what Beck wants. Limbaugh, this would be better than sex for Limbaugh, though I don't know if I have no idea about Limbaugh's sex life. I shudder. I can't even think about that. But this would be a perfect sex substitute for these pigs, to watch people kill each other, to see the violence. We have a class of people in this country that seem to have all clustered into media who are truly, truly sociopathic. We'll be back after the break. Phone lines are open, 877-996-2556. Get in here and join us if you feel like it. I'm Mike Malloy.
Jay Farner here.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Well, the 10th debate among these clowns is over. Terry sent me an email. Mike, I'm sitting here watching the debate, listening to your show off and on. I have to agree with you. Best panel, best asked questions of any debate so far. The rest of the networks need to go back and watch how these people handled their debate and learn how to hold a great debate. But I would not expect anything this type of debate from this network. CNBC is an awesome network and has some of the most informed anchors in the news business. Yeah, thanks, Terry. Regardless of the idiocy of some of these answers and the evasion that was going on, it always goes on. I don't care who the candidate is or what political party. They're asked a straightforward question, especially these Republicans. And they cannot or will not give a straightforward answer. But I would give a lot of credit to, I don't particularly care for the point of view of some of the CNBC anchors. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that they were the most astute and the most knowledgeable in their questions and their insistence at times, until they realized the candidates were not going to answer, their insistence on an answer. It was certainly different from Wolf Blitzer or that collection of morons from the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization. Oh, my God. All right, let's do some phone calls. The number is 877-996-2556. David's in Oklahoma City. Hello, David.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I've got to call and let you guys know that you guys have lost one, I'm no longer a Democrat. I'm now, if there's such a thing, a right-wing independent.
Okay, well, have a good life, sir. There's no point in your calling me, though. I mean, what the hell's the point in calling me? I don't care what you are. Jesus, why do people call me and tell me that? You're no longer a Democrat. You've never been a Democrat in your life. You wouldn't even know how to spell the word. Get out of town. Jesus. Somebody's going to call me and sit on hold? I'll tell you, I'm no longer a Democrat. Call Rush. He'll love it. Jeremy's in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Jeremy.
That was pretty funny, Mike.
Yeah, it was.
I called to talk about these boneheads at Penn State who failed to turn in a child molester, which they've known about for years.
Oh, my God. I cannot believe this. But you know what? I think probably if you check, you will find that most of these men involved are Catholic.
Yeah, no, actually, they said on, MSNBC maybe last night that the head coach there, he actually participates in the church a whole lot there. So a bunch of kids were saying he should stay on regardless because he's a good, faithful man and he helps out with the church kids.
Now you're talking about Joe Paterno?
I'm talking about Joe Paterno who said he wants to retire, whereas I think they should just kick his butt right out right now.
Well, I'm saying this Catholic thing because the Catholic Church, just like apparently the administration at Penn State, once you become all powerful and you have this God in the Catholic Church, we know what their God is. In Penn State, the God was football. Nothing gets in the way. If children are being sexually abused, if there are pedophiles wandering around taking advantage of kids, it's kept quiet. That's just how it works. And it's horrifying. I cannot believe this. As this story started to unfold, and what did we hear today? A ninth or tenth person came forward. This is just like the what the Boston Globe uncovered about the Catholic Church. It's just horrifying.
I was going to say, yeah, all these people coming forward saying they actually physically witnessed things happening in the shower rooms. And this guy was being molded to possibly take over for Joe when he left.
Yeah. I don't know. One of the stories I heard today, and I don't know how it made it onto television, but that this guy at the center of this, Sandusky, the former line coach, line coach, I think, that Sandusky, one of the senior interns, it's not the right word, but it's kind of like a coaching intern, he heard a slapping noise coming from the shower. He went to the shower. This is on Penn State campus. And he saw the Sandusky performing anal sex against a 10-year-old boy. And nothing was reported to the authorities. Nothing.
Mike, I tried to give you a break from these freaks and geeks. See how that turned out?
Yeah, I know.
Have a good night.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Jeremy. Yeah, the Penn State story, I don't even know how to go there. I really don't. The fact that Joe Paterno, who... I'm not a big football fan. I used to be, but I just kind of gave it up. You know, when you have coaches that are making more than English teachers, I live in Georgia, where the University of Georgia is another. It's like University of Texas or University of Alabama. I mean, there are certain states, most of them in the South, but Penn State is an example where football is, I don't know, it's right up there with Jesus to these people. And in terms of how the sports program is conducted at Big Ten universities, at Pac-12 or whatever these conferences are now, I've really lost touch. But the way students are recruited, what is a true freshman? What is a true senior? The perks that are never talked about, the budgets that go to universities, it's a goddamn perversion. I mean, it really, really is. It's sick. And when you have coaches that are making $1 million or $2 million a year, to do what? To do what? To give a bunch of alumni a sexual rush because their team wins a bowl game someplace? And what about these bowl games? You know, how many bowl games are there now? There are enough bowl games that everybody gets to win one. It's pretty disgusting. I used to be a football fan. professional football dropped off my radar scope a long time ago. And now, you know, for a number of years, I just can't do it. Can't do it. So, you know, pay any attention to it or get involved in it emotionally or, you know, from a standpoint of sports, just can't do it. But this Penn State thing is horrific. I can't get my mind around it. I can understand, to a greater degree, the poison of the Catholic Church, how the Catholic Church, hell, it's gotten to the point where one of its organizing principles is pedophilia. But college football? And then down to Penn State? I realize I'm making some sweeping statements here. I don't care. I don't care. I really don't care. To me, it's disgusting and it's sick, and to hell with all of them, up to and including this God himself, Joe Paterno, this poor guy, 84 years old, and this is how he goes out. And to see the video of the students last night gathered around his home, you know, clapping and chanting for Uncle Joe. Do these students, I mean, how would these students feel if their little sister or little brother, mostly little brothers, if their little 8 and 10 and 9-year-old brothers were anally raped by somebody on Joe Paterno's coaching staff? Would they still be cheering? And nothing was reported. And nothing was done except to cover it up. Would these students holding up their iPods and their cell phones with, or not their iPods, but their iPhones, and taking pictures of this poor, decrepit 84-year-old man standing in his doorway, would they be cheering and clapping and shouting for him had it been one, their little brother or their little cousin or their son or daughter who had been viciously raped by these sons of bitches, and then this conspiracy of silence? I don't think so. So to the college students at Penn State who are cheering Joe Paterno, you ought to shut up and sit down. Go open up a book. Go to the goddamn library and read something, and let Joe Paterno and the rest of this coaching staff just kind of cook in its own juices. I mean, that would be the most compassionate thing you could do, students. Man. And I didn't think I was going to even mention that. We'll be right back. The hour. We have a little breaking news here. The University, Penn State University's longtime president, Graham's Spanier, and coach Joe Paterno have both been fired tonight by the Board of Trustees at Penn State. We're going to take this live. Go ahead, Kathy, bring it up a little bit. A little bit of this press conference.
Aware that it's under the Department of Education investigation, and what's the larger message about how Penn State responds to allegations of sexual abuse on campus?
I am just briefly aware of the matter that you just described, and have no information on it, no real knowledge of it. If there is another investigation by a federal authority, of course, the university will cooperate in every means possible, and beyond that, I really have no knowledge of it. And I think, as we indicated in our statement yesterday, we intend to be as responsible as we can and make whatever changes are necessary to ensure that we have the highest standard of conduct.
Has Coach Paterno been told he can go to the game on Saturday or just stay away?
We did not discuss that matter.
We've talked to a lot of students over the past few days. What do you want to say to those who think that the university, the Board of Trustees, has handled this matter poorly?
Well, we handled it the best way we could with the information we had and with the time that was available to us. Again, wanting to be decisive, but also wanted to be thorough and appropriately deliberate. Others are welcome to their own opinion. We believe we did the best job we could.
What would be the harm in letting the clerks continue to be in the season?
Can you define the term best interests of the university regarding Coach Paterno?
Not really, not for an individual. I think I'll leave it all to you to describe, to decide what the best interest. I would say, though, that the current situation we are in, which, you know, by all accounts, has its roots in a certain organization of the university, the situation we're in today is not in the university's best interest.
What would be the harm in letting the coach continue to the end of the season? What's to be gained? Tell me specifically.
Well, I'm sure I can tell you specifically. In our view, we thought a change now was necessary to enable or to allow this process to continue. We thought was going to be damaging the university, and therefore we took the action we did.
And we're back. Michael, this is in the broad scope. Yet another.
It's pretty astonishing. Graham Spanier, who was university's longtime president, has been fired, effective immediately, as has Joe Paterno, who has been coach for, what, 40 years, head coach? A long time. Paterno's longtime assistant, Jerry Sandusky, of course, he's the one that's been charged with sexually abusing, and I'm sure that'll be upgraded to rape, at least 8 boys, I think that number's up to 11 now, over a 15-year period. No word of what will happen to Tim Curley, the athletic director, and Gary Schultz, the senior vice president for finance and business. They've been charged with perjury and failing to report to authorities what they knew of these allegations. But Penn State Board of Trustees have, up to now, has not made any announcement as to the future of Tim Curley and Gary Schultz. But if you follow this sort of stuff, and I normally don't follow the activities of the athletic department of a university, except when it gets into this kind of horrific situation. It's just I mean, it's just vile. You know, if you're a regular listener to my program, you know my attitude about pain and suffering caused to children, whether it is physical abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse, I don't care what it is. I have no mercy for people like that. Just none whatsoever. None whatsoever. And to think that so many people were aware of this, and according to the reports and the indictments and so on and so forth, it's just like what happened in the Catholic Church. It's the same thing. There were so many men in positions of power who understood that one of their number was a goddamn, just violent, violent pervert, a pedophile, someone who set up an organization. What was it called? Second Chance or something? I mean, so often they do that, don't they, these pedophiles? They'll set up an organization, or they'll become a scout leader or a YMCA camp director or something that'll put them in contact with children who look to them for guidance, and then they rape them? And then they sexually abuse them? I hope the Sandusky is sentenced for the rest of his life to prison. That wouldn't be good enough. But I'll tell you what, when you go to prison, when you're a short eyes and you go to prison, short eyes being a child molester, the time you spend in prison may not be as long as your sentence, because child molesters and rapists are looked at in prison as the scum, the lowest of the low, that have to be eliminated, even from prison society. All right, we have a break coming up. When we come back, we'll go back to your phone calls. Like I say, I don't pay that much attention to what happens inside the athletic department of a university, but this story is just vile. It's like what happens inside the hierarchy of a religious organization that has spent decades, probably centuries, brutally molesting and violating children. Too bad there isn't a hell where all of these freaks could burn for eternity.
Colored pens and sexing up, and I'm the someone who knew. they're not telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember. I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand.
Before the hour, you know, the Republican Party is all about abusive women and abusive children. They do it a little bit more subtly. You won't see some of these leading politicians actually forcing anal intercourse on children or beating women in public or raping them. But they do it in subtler ways, Republicans do. They disembowel, they gut social programs designed to help children who are at risk through nothing they have done. They try to prevent women from having even the most basic kind of privacy, the privacy that has to exist between a woman and her physician. The whole Republican Party is a party of psychological and sociological rapists. That's all they are. That's all they are. So when this stuff surfaces in the physical world, as opposed to the kind of abuse and rape and perversion that the Republican Party perpetrates on an ongoing basis against the most vulnerable people in our society, including women and children, and especially poor women and children. It doesn't make any difference what the race is. Poor. The economically disadvantaged, if you will pardon the term. Republicans are constantly trying to beat them even further into the ground. It's another form of rape, violence, and that's the Republican Party. Michael Moore was just on Lawrence O'Donnell's program talking about how this sex abuse in this country is horrific. And nobody knows the extent. I mean, when you have the leading or the second leading religion in America infested with pedophiles, hundreds, thousands of victims over decades. What the hell kind of a society do you have? But you want to know where it starts? It starts with these filthy conservatives, these filthy Republicans. Quick example, for those of you who are sitting out there going, oh, God damn, what's he talking about? When Maria Bartiromo tonight tried to ask Herman Cain about his disrespect for women and sexual abuse charges and in an oblique way tried to bring this up because it's going to be brought up. I mean, this chump Cain is going nowhere. And how did the audience at the debate respond when Bartiromo brought it up? They booed the question. How dare you, woman? Shut up. Don't be asking the man about the five or more women who have insisted he sexually assaulted him. Don't bring it up, Bartiromo. And then they applauded Cain after he gave his non-answer. So, you know, the roots of this kind of vile, filthy behavior is found in the political attitudes of every single Republican office holder and every single Republican voter in America, whether it is conscious or not among the voters. This is where it comes from. And it starts with that attitude. It starts with the kind of pressure against poor women and poor children until it finally explodes into a realm of the second most popular religion in America, infested with pedophiles, sports departments, homes for children, infested with with pedophiles, you filthy pigs. The Republican Party ought to be banned. Just banned. And now you have a sexual predator running for president, treated with the utmost respect, as is customary to afford those who seek the highest office in the land. A sexual predator. That's what Herman Cain, that's all he is! But Limbaugh leads the attack on the first woman to go public. Oh, yeah, what's her name? Buy a lick? Buy a lick? And the ongoing assault against poor people, poor women, poor children in this country over the past 25 years by these right-wing radio hosts, it never stops. It never stops. Kevin is in Colorado Springs. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was going to comment on the idiocy of the debate.
But sure.
After listening to the comment or to the what you said before the break and then the press conference, I've got a comment on that. A couple things. I guarantee you, Mike, the people that were in that chain of command, I'll almost guarantee you all of them are good right-wing Republicans. And each of them, when I first heard this story, I thought, well, Paterno did report it to a supervisor until I found out that in Pennsylvania, legally, if they're part of a public school, and Penn State is a public school.
Oh, they have an obligation. Yeah, they've got
to. They have an obligation not to report it to their supervisor, but to report it to the police.
But that's the conspiracy of silence, that Republican men. And I'll tell you, sometimes it just makes me ashamed to be male when these kinds of stories come out. It makes me spend the next day kind of just hiding here in the house rather than going out and saying, hello, hi, I'm a white male, I'm an American, for fear that somebody is going to mistake me for a Republican. I don't know how they would, but it's just shameful, shameful stuff.
Well, it just gets to the point. In fact, if you listen to between the lines of that press conference, one of the reasons I think Paterno got fired is because this story is going to get bigger as opposed to go away.
Yeah.
And I wonder, there's one of two things that happened. Either this kid never reported it because he was so traumatized, he's 20 years old now, or, and I'm betting on the second one, his family was given a huge financial settlement by the university to stay quiet. I'll almost bet you that that's part of the story, because that's what happened with the Catholic Church.
Well, a reporter for a television station, either in State College, PA, or somewhere around there, was interviewed, I think, this morning on ABC or NBC, and the reporter said that she had talked with the mother of the boy who came forward. And I don't know if it was the original kid who was raped, but it was a 15-year-old kid who did come forward. And there was nothing except outrage. There was no hush money paid, no attempt to hide this one, because this 15-year-old kid was the first one to have the courage to come forward. All the adult males who knew about this, and apparently there were several in positions of extreme power within the Penn State Athletic Department and the Penn State Administration, they knew about this, and they knew what their obligations were, and they remained silent. So I don't think it was a case of, I can't see a parent being paid hush money knowing that their son was anally raped by some freak who is a coach at a university. I just can't see it. Maybe
you got to remember, these kids were troubled, quote unquote, kids. That's what this Sandusky's organization
right,
did.
Right, but apparently not all of them. I mean,
right.
It wasn't just the kids from that phony-ass charity that he set up so that
right.
he would have children to prey upon. It was other children, too, I think, unless I've got, unless I don't have that part of the story right. But the whole thing is just so unbelievably dirty and disgusting and vile, and so much a reflection of what right-wing political points of view have been leading towards in this country for years. And I'm not stretching a point in saying that the anti-woman, anti-poor woman especially, anti-poor child attitude that these right-wingers put out on a 24/7 basis is just it's just horrifying. And the way women are treated by the Christian right in this country, whether it's Protestant or Catholic, they're treated as if they a piece of furniture. A woman does not have a right to go to a doctor and in the privacy of that doctor's office decide whether or not she wants a perfectly legal medical procedure. And these right-wing sons of bitches have the audacity to talk about government interference in the marketplace, where they have no problem with government interference in a doctor's office or between a woman's legs? Oh, my God. Kevin, I got to leave it there. Thank you. So if I count you rabbits, then I count you fascists. Bullets fly up into day.
I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Out off of my feet. 10 before the hour. The York Daily Record, newspaper in York, Pennsylvania. It's kind of funny that I'm quoting from this because I worked there 35 years ago. But on their website, this was written before tonight's firing of Paterno and the school's the head of the school. This is what it says. Joe Paterno has been a prominent supporter of the Pennsylvania Republican Party and spoke at a Bush campaign rally at the York Expo Center in 2004. His son, Scott Paterno, was a congressional candidate that year, but York County Republican Chairman A. Carville Peck Foster said he doubts the scandal of Paterno's firing will have any kind of lasting effect on the party. For all of Paterno's prominence among the state Republicans, he was ultimately a celebrity rather than a policy setter. Oh, yes. Peck Foster says, no question, Joe was a Republican, but he was not closely involved with the party structure in any way. Another Republican, State Representative Stan Saylor, doesn't think the situation will have any kind of demoralizing effect on the state Republican Party. No, don't worry about it. This guy says, quote, we have to be careful on who we condemn in this case until we know all the facts. It's America. We're in America. You're innocent until you're proven guilty. But there's no question it was mishandled by Penn State and certain individuals, end quote. State Representative Scott Perry, another Republican, also emphasized that the story is still playing out and all the facts aren't established yet. No, gotta wait. Gotta wait. A Democrat, State Representative Eugene DePasquale, said he thinks Paterno's, well, this is written today, decision to retire, was appropriate. DePasquale said he'd be surprised if Paterno is still around by the game this upcoming weekend. Well, DePasquale, you were right. DePasquale, who played college football himself, said he's irritated at the extent to which football has overshadowed all other aspects of the story. DePasquale said, quote, it seems so few people are actually worried about the kids, end quote. Mr. DePasquale, you're talking about your Republican colleagues in the state of Pennsylvania. They don't give a goddamn about kids. Not a bit. And good on you, sir, that you do. And you point out the fact that, I mean, you weren't direct in saying Republicans don't care. Jesus, what a disgusting, disgusting story. Mark is in Seattle at Occupy Seattle right now. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Good to talk to you. Hey, I was a journalist actually on a national radio network before I decided to join this occupation.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to encourage other reporters to go and join them. I mean, literally, just, you might lose some work, but you actually might get some work in alternative media if you do this, because it's been a great experience for me, and I've seen how things have changed since the beginning of this occupation. As of National Bank Transfer Day, I think people are starting to take us a little bit more seriously, considering that about 700,000 to a million people took their money out of Chase, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America. And, you know, I think that that shows that this is not a bunch of disorganized, crazy people hanging out in the streets. It's actually a very organized movement. It has many aspects to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be no particular leader or any particular political party or economic philosophy that's running the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's growing and it's getting very effective. I mean,
I think so, too. And you know, I think the results of the election in Ohio last night, and the results of the election in Maine, where it was decided to repeal a law that was passed right after the Republican got elected governor of Maine, and that law was that same-day registration for voting was henceforth and hereon not allowed. That was repealed so they can go back to what they've always done. And in the state of Ohio, of course, a kick right in John Kasich's ugly face, where the people of Ohio said, you're not going to take away the right to collectively bargain of workers in the state. So I attribute this directly to the consciousness raising that has occurred as a result of the Occupy movement. There has not been a nationwide consciousness raising movement in this country since the anti-war movement. The environmental movement, sure, but it wasn't nationwide. I was active in that. And the time before the anti-war movement, of course, was the civil rights movement. So this is the first time in a very long time that a movement has developed organically that has forced people awake and to take a look at what's going on in this country. So I directly attribute some of these electoral victories the other night to the Occupy movement.
Well, we only have one demand that we've actually passed by the General Assembly at Occupy Seattle,
uh-huh.
And that is that we are demanding that our own city divest our public money from those same banks and to endorse Occupy Seattle. So there's actually a vote coming up on Monday at the Seattle City Council.
Is that right?
Where one of our city councilmen, Nick Licata, is going to present this resolution, and it has a good chance to pass. We've had a really good response with the city council. Unfortunately, the mayor, Mike McGinn, who said that he supported us, actually stick the cops on us many, many times and had, you know, 100 of our tents confiscated. But we were invited by the students at Seattle Central Community College and the faculty to join them there. So now we're in a safe, nice place. We've got over 100 tents, and the students and the faculty are joining us, actually. So we've developed the kind of tight coalition there because of all the budget cuts to education.
Well, I hope, Mark, I hope you'll call in and let me know how that vote goes. We're flat out of time for this the segment, but if you'll call me Monday during the program, let me know. I sure would appreciate it. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for checking in. Take care. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. In the music there. No, you can't have a Moody Blues concert. No, Bob. It is 7 past the hour. Shifting gears yet again, I want to share with you something Prairie 2 wrote. You sent it in last night. We were all busy last night with Herman Cain garbage. I'll get to that in a second. John and Raleigh wrote in, though, also last night. Well, actually wrote in this morning, but it was about last night's show. Anyway, Mike, one issue is that the working Americans, a smaller number than ever, have no time to hear the message that fascism has taken over. Back in the days, pre-1999, when I made great money, I didn't care. I didn't research, didn't think, since I believed I was on top, if you know what I mean. But I did know, based on my reading of economics and many of Alexander Solzhenitsyn's books as a 70s University of Illinois student, that society was capable of rendering ordinary human thought and activity as an actionable offense. Americans don't know about this. And despite the TSA and the IRS, they still won't wake up. My belief is that until a tipping point of Americans lose their disposable income and see their respected, in other words, middle class, neighbors jailed or physically hurt by local police, and or lose their retirement and jobs, we won't see that groundswell of action. Until then, we will see the Herman Cains and Fox News heads speak for Americans. That angry, bigoted, money-in-the-bank group of blanks and fascists that seem to dominate our media, our thought, and radio talk shows. Back when I was working and making great money, I thought I could overcome the crap I was seeing politically and economically, so I focused on that. But after I lost it all, I realized what an idiot I'd been. So this is the basis for my comments in this email, and I believe our politicians are playing the game of large numbers. As long as 80% of Americans get some kind of paycheck, a revolution's not going to happen. They might be right, looking at other countries today, and of course, in the ex-Soviet Union, people are passive, but are taught a lesson each time a reporter is killed for looking into how the government there now operates. We in America are close to that. And I recall a Chinese industrialist saying a few years ago that eventually America would realize it could have wealth without democracy. And this is what we're seeing now. If Americans at Occupy Wall Street remain ignorant of the true issues and just fall into the hands of Fox News or Limbaugh, we won't see a damn thing happen. Every person for himself or herself strikes me as the only individual way of survival. The media are too strong. The religious right is too corrupt. The evangelicals are too timid. And working Americans are just too scared to death to step up. I'm saying this in a 20 to 30 year window. Maybe after that time, our kids will take on the work, the sacrifice, and agree, if necessary, to die to restore the country. Today, we're all too much in our heads and not enough action. And we're too timid. I hear people call into talk shows citing Bible verses, as if that's all it took. As the infamous Dr. Gene Scott said on a recording recently that I heard, if you get all into reading about what Jesus said and don't translate that into action, well, you should just sit down and shut up. Not that I'm religious, since I long ago gave up on that stuff, but this country seems to think that the Bible holds the answers, and all we see as a result is the Tea Party. We are being played. Nixon's Southern strategy is working great as a divisive national political tool. I cannot stand the apparent fact that most of my life has been spent dealing with this crap. I'm angry that I never found a way to either change this or to insulate myself from it. It's at my door, and I hate that. Take care. I listen most nights live, but if not, via recording. John in Raleigh. I get a lot of emails like that from people who have this. It's almost impossible to put into words frustration. You know, I have it too. I can come up with facile solutions. You know, Malloy's democratic socialism is one. Knowing full well that my ideas about social democracy or democratic socialism would never come to pass in this country without in the tens of millions of people resisting the current cusp of fascism that we're all sitting on. And, this is nothing new. People have been writing and talking about this current state heavily for the past couple, 3 years. Back in the 30s, there was an absolute move to move us into a fascist stance, the entire country. There were even plans to assassinate, to murder Franklin Roosevelt in order to achieve this goal. There was an effort by American industrialists, plural, to link up with Hitler as he built the Third Reich. The idea being that the Caucasians in the United States and Canada, along with those in the UK and Germany, were the natural rulers of the earth and should act back then in an immediate sense to establish that hegemony and make sure that there was no challenge from any other group of people, including the Soviets, which the Germans and a lot of people saw as not quite human. You know, after all, they were Slavic. And the racial purists would tell you that the Slavs were a mongrelized race, I believe was the term used. So anyway, there has always been in this country this inclination towards fascism. And a political movement can bide its time for generations. It really can. It can bide its time for decades until the time is right. And the instructions are passed from generation to generation, if need be, so that when the time is ripe, the radicals can make their move. Now, this country's been going on for 30 years. With the advent of Reaganism, and it's not that I have some deep dislike of Reagan. I don't think, yeah, I agree with his son, Ron Reagan Jr., who I've come to know, that Dad was not completely all there when Dad served his first day as President of the United States. But he was surrounded by a cadre of hungry wolves, all fascists, who were determined And Reagan became the figurehead. And a lot of people disagree with. A lot of people want to demonize Ronald Reagan. I can't seem to get there. You know what I mean? It's very easy for me to demonize some of these other rat bastards, like any member of the Bush family or Cheney or people like that. But I just can't quite get there. I realize that Reagan did some things that set us up for disaster, but I don't think they were of his initiative, if you know what I'm talking about. So, but for the past 30 years, after the defeat of Barry Goldwater, actually, if you want to go back a little bit further, that's when the fascist right wing in this country decided, okay, we have got to start pumping mountains of money into the system wherever we can, into the political system, the educational system, the economic system, the media system. It's got to be tons of money because this is going to be a long, drawn-out struggle, and we will win. That was the attitude of the fascists. And here we are, right on the cusp of that.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Into the distance, ribbon of black, stretched to the point of no turning.
21 past the hour. So yeah, I get a lot of emails like the one from John in Raleigh. And I have kind of traveled that same route, that same road, where you reach a point, or we reached a point, for me it was probably four decades ago, where, you know, I come to realize that the mythologies and the stories I had been taught as a kid growing up about American exceptionalism, although that term was never used, it was just implied, and about the sanctity, I can't think of a different word, of our so-called free enterprise system, and never understanding that it was a rigged game to begin with. It was always rigged. It was always rigged in a way that would benefit, to the greatest degree, a certain cadre of people at the top. Because of the struggles of the labor movement, a middle class developed in this country because of the struggles of progressives and Democrats over about a 60 or 70 year period. A middle class emerged, especially after World War II. And of course, this is something that the right wingers hated, the proto-fascists hated, because the middle class is middle class is always a bulwark against totalitarianism, no matter which, you know, whether it's far left or far right. You can't take over the minds and attitudes of people who are living a fairly decent life. You can't do it. If people are in this era, if people are, and by this era I mean the past 80, 90 years, if people have decent jobs, if they have a means of seeing how they can improve themselves and that their children will have a better life, if activities are available to kind of neutralize that ennui, that angst that most people develop over the course of their lives anyway, just from being alive, that existential misery that just seems to start cloying around people, if you can get away from that, if you can break the monotony, you know, the life of quiet desperation and do things and go places and meet people and have a good time. And I'm not talking about being wealthy. I'm talking about being just in a good, solid working or middle class environment. Then totalitarianism doesn't have an ice cube's chance in hell. It cannot get its fangs into a society that lives that way. So, the rise of the middle class in this country was always seen by the fascists as, we don't want this. God damn it, how did this happen? We should have gone ahead and murdered FDR and aligned with Hitler. That has been the real headache for the fascists in this country for the past three generations, that opportunity was missed. So, here we are today, 30 years after Reagan. And from the defeat of Barry Goldwater to the election of Ronald Reagan, it was during that period of time, that wasn't that long, a 16-year period, that the fascists in this country really went to work. They really knuckled down and went to work. There were a few bumps in the road along the way, a few things that they had to deal with, but they more or less played it cool in the political scene, more or less, I'm saying, play it cool in the political scene, and realized that they had to take control of other aspects of this society to the point where they were massively influential. So the targets were established. They had to pick a political party. Well, obviously, it's going to be the Republican Party. They had to pick the education system, public education. They had already lost the universities, so they went for the primary and secondary education level. Media was certainly a target after Reagan, and that brought about the development of real societal monsters. I mean, real killers, real horrific personalities like Rush Limbaugh, whose sole function was to provide the propaganda that is necessary to destabilize the society. The fear, the hatred, the angst, the glorification of war, the demonization of poor people or people who haven't quite made it up the ladder of success, demonizing every single element of society except those elements controlled by the fascists. That was Limbaugh's function. That's why he was paid $25 million a year to do this. Or was it 50? Who cares? And Limbaugh was just the mold. Out of that mold came several more of these talking heads. And of course, the fascistization of media was at a point where it was very easy then to start eliminating moderates, eliminating liberals, eliminating progressives out of this brand new medium of communication, talk radio, and making sure that the only voices that were heard, Even in alleged liberal areas like, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, pick one. That even in those areas, the dominant, if not exclusive voice would be the voice of fascists. Well, they have just about succeeded. More when we come back.
A soldier of a misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil.
Each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
25 before the hour. So, you know, I go through all that periodically when I get an email like the one from John O'Reilly. And, that awakening, that realization that there has been a struggle in this country, it has not been what we perceive it to be. There's a gigantic movie screen that we all watch, and on that movie screen is projected this idealization of Democratic ideas and, you know, mom and the flag and dad and apple pie and, you know, the kids playing in the backyard and a bicycle on the front porch and a puppy flopping around. And, you know, that image that is in there, it's in there. And it doesn't make any difference what race you are or what religion you are. That's the image. That is the idealized democratic picture that has been projected on the screen that we all are supposed to look at. Well, you know, you get a little bit older, then you realize it is just a screen. It is just a projection. It is just a movie. And like any movie, it comes to an end. You can get up and walk out. The bulb in the camera heats up to the point where the film melts and breaks, and that's it. And so here we are. But you come to that realization, I think everybody comes to that realization in the U.S. at some point. Now, there are ways to immunize yourself against that, of course, and that is to be among the top 0.1% or 0.5%, where the amount of wealth that has been stolen, handed down from generation to generation, you know, you've heard it before, behind any family wealth, you will always find criminal activity. And that is so true. From the Kennedys to the Fords to the Bushes, it doesn't make any difference. Criminal activity. Because people, I mean, you don't make billions upon billions of dollars by going out there and just busting your ass digging ditches, or by putting widgets together, or by forming companies. You make that kind of money by theft, fraud, lying, cheating, and stealing. And you know that. And if you're sitting there in your car, wherever you are, and you're a right-winger, you're conservative, and you think, you know, this guy on the radio is just crazier than a goddamn loon. And the reason you think that is because you think someday you might make it into that top 0.5%. Boy, do I have a surprise for you, booby. And if you're 30s, in your 30s, it'll take you probably another 20 years to come to the realization. By then, it's way too late for you. So just continue. I mean, you know, what can I say? Continue your delusion. Continue to watching the movie. Go right ahead. The Occupy movement has presented itself, and it's been very organic. It's been led by young people. I don't care how the pigs in this society, the capitalists, the shills, the demons, the people like Limbaugh who have been created by the neo-fascists to disturb and destroy. I don't care how they try to warp the energy behind the occupation movement or the Occupy movement. It's not going to work. People who understand this movement, and if it has to be explained to you, then you, I don't know, you better try to educate yourself a little bit. But once you understand what the Occupy movement is, you understand why there's no leadership. You understand why there is not a set number of demands. And you also understand why the corporate media is demanding just that. Who are your leaders? What do you want? Why has this happened? What are you talking? These are the people who are on the other side of the movie screen, the ones that are still watching the film and still believe that the film is reality. Well, we know a movie's not real. Come on, you know that. Anyway, I wanted to get to Prairie 2's piece that he sent the other day, so this would be a good time. The title of this is "Everybody All at Once Scream Boo." The current depression has been going on so long that the majority of the unemployed are no longer receiving benefits. 18 months ago, 75% were still getting benefits, and now only 48% remain eligible. This doesn't include people who weren't eligible for benefits to begin with, like people who hadn't worked enough since depleting their benefits after their last job was outsourced. Those people simply aren't counted. Teenagers entering the workforce or recent college grads and those looking for work after retraining for the second or third or fourth time following the outsourcing of their middle class jobs, well, they don't count either. In the golden days before Clinton ended welfare as we know it, in 1996, these people would get welfare. Not today, as this would lessen the pressure to drive down wages if people weren't willing to work for food. And not enough of that. Nearly 5 million Americans have been out of work for more than a year. And again, that's just the ones that are being counted. Besides people who have simply fallen through the non-existent safety net, there are millions that took early retirement or disability payments that would still work if they could. Still more millions have gone back to school to live on student loans with little chance of finding a job when they finally enter the job market. Fully half of recent college grads either have no work or work at a job that they didn't need a college degree to get. The majority of new corporate lawyers each year are in India. Medical researchers, accountants, engineers, architects, and on and on and on are all being outsourced. By the end of the year, Congress must extend the 99 weeks program, or another million people will have their benefits end suddenly, and this number will grow steadily. By February coming, it will be 2.2 million cut off from benefits. But $45 billion for the extension is a lot of money for teabaggers to agree to. No admission from them that they are the ones who caused this mess. They bought into the magic of Reaganomics and free trade, tax cuts for the rich that didn't trickle down, wars that would pay for themselves. Free trade would make everything more affordable and create high tech, high finance, and high wage jobs. That never happened. The teabaggers made these mistakes despite our warnings, but they won't pay for them. The children, the old, the helpless will pay with their lives. Even if Congress does the right thing, this one small right thing, and renews the unemployment benefit program, this won't help the 99ers who have already fallen off the rolls. The Census Bureau says unemployment benefits kept 3.2 million people from stepping over the edge into the abyss of poverty last year. The threshold for poverty is far too low, of course, defined as annual income below $22,314 for a family of four. The cost of raising a child in America with a middle-class lifestyle until age 18 is estimated to be $500,000, and with no frills like piano lessons or cell phones. For a family of four with two kids, this would be $55,000 a year, which is more than the median family income is in the United States. Now, you can make do on a fraction of this by giving up luxuries like good nutrition or health care, and the numbers make it clear that the majority of American families are giving up a lot of things just to get by. The reality is that millions of American families in the most powerful, most wealthy nation on the planet aren't getting by. The leader of the most powerful institution in the world, the Speaker of the House and the Congress of the United States of America, says we are broke. He says it every day on his way to a $1,000 dinner. The poor, the weak, the sick, the children, and the elderly must fend for themselves in this land that this evil man calls exceptional. It's only exceptional for him and his cronies. A new record number of people got food stamps in August, more than 46 million, and the benefits are enough to feed a family, and food banks can't begin to serve the needy. The longest people have been on unemployment set a record during the Reagan recession of 1983 at 21 weeks. The current average is twice that. Reagan fixed his economic problems, which were much less then, with trillions in deficit spending, back when a trillion was real money, and he deregulated banking to pump out trillions in consumer credit. Don't mind the savings and loan crash from deregulation. Weekly unemployment checks average about $300 nationwide. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated that each $1 spent on unemployment benefits generates up to $1.90 in GDP growth. Still, you are talking about the equivalent of a minimum wage job that in itself doesn't produce anything. A modest increase in the minimum wage would have much more significant effects, especially when you consider that such an increase would combat the falling wage trend we now have. When unemployment benefits expire around Christmas time, the Congress will decide to extend benefits for people out of work for less than 99 weeks or cast them into the gutter. This will be the first time the measure has come up with the House under the control of Republicans. The safe bet is that those out of work by no fault of their own, to quote the benefit rules, will be heading for that slushy place beyond the curb. Even most Democrats aren't considering any help for the millions already past 99 weeks of eligibility as they are treated like ghosts. They may haunt the Occupy Wall Street sites, but Republicans don't believe they really exist. Tell them boo. Everybody, all at once. Boo!
You're gonna spread your wings.
PrairieNumeral2.com.
Take the sky.
Jeff sent me an email about the filthy pig man's corrosive comment and modus operandi. Jeff writes, however, it's never been so transparent as in his defense of Herman Cain against accusations of inappropriate sexual behavior. Limbaugh twisted the pronunciation of Sharon Bialik's name beyond recognition into by a lick. By a lick. His lewd, choreographed transmutation will embed into the primitive minds of his listeners and effectively reverse the hunter-prey relationship, regardless of the validity of Cain's accuser's testimony. From a perverse and most disturbing perspective, it defines a slithering horror the left is up against. The most brilliant Obama speech will never homestead as deeply into the subconscious as by a lick will in defense of alleged sexual aggression. The right is truly an insidious enemy. I fear, Jeff writes, the left will never comprehend, no less heed, the warning issued by the devil in The Devil's Advocate. Here's a line. This is John Milton, the John Milton character, which was really the devil. I'm the hand up Mona Lisa's skirt. I'm a surprise, Kevin. They don't see me coming. That's what you're missing. Rush Limbaugh is the type of human being that, I don't know. You know, my skin would crawl just being in his presence. And I would just feel a rush to try. I would feel that he was a destructive force that was about to envelop me. And I would do everything I could to counter that force, if you know what I mean. Limbaugh is so vile. In my experience, and I'm saying in my experience, I didn't know Hitler. I didn't live during his time. But in my experience, Rush Limbaugh has got to be the most vile human being I've ever been exposed to and that this country has ever been exposed to. With no argument here, no, there is no comparison. I defy you to find someone who has done the damage to this society that Rush Limbaugh has done. I hate to even talk about the pig. Oh, this is appropriate. The Family Research Council just gave an award to the legislator that most represents family values and most supports those values. And the Family Research Council gave the reward to Representative Republican Representative Joe Walsh. Isn't he the one that said, "You lie!" Or was that somebody else? I don't know. Anyway, he was the only Illinois congressman to be named a, quote, true blue member of Congress for unwavering support of the family by the Family Research Council Action Committee. I think this was last week. Now, you talk about a spectacle of rank hypocrisy. This is a guy, Joe Walsh, who owes $100,000 in back child support, who's more or less told the children, now this is a Republican, who would do anything he could, you see, to stop women from consulting in private with their physician to maybe sweep from their bodies a zygote or unwanted pregnancy, but this son of a bitch, after he persists in having children, refuses to pay for them when he leaves his wife for somebody else. And this guy, and the irony here is lost on the Family Research Council. I don't think they even understand the word irony. To give an award, a family values award, to a man who owes $100,000, who refuses to take care of his own living, breathing children. To do that is to, and the Family Research Council defines themselves as Christian. This is to urinate all over the crucifix. You talk about that Andre Serrano piece, "Piss Christ," that got so much attention because the artist was trying to show just this kind of behavior. Everybody said, oh my God, that is so sacrilegious. Urine, a crucifix in urine. Oh my God. This is the point that the artist was trying to make. How an organization like the Family Research Council urinates all over the Christ. Because didn't he say, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven"? And the Family Research Council gives a family values award to a pig who will not support his living children. Good God. Oh, and in the award, Tony Perkins, this hypocritical son of a bitch who runs the Family Research Council, he said, quote, "We thank Congressman Walsh, who has voted consistently to defend faith, family, and freedom." End quote. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.